So, what happens when a political administration actually achieves exactly what they promised out on the campaign trail, but the resulting win accidentally breaks the global system?
Right, it's a huge question.
Yeah, and today we are looking at this ultimate historical paradox. Because, I mean, we usually think of history like an X-ray machine, right? You point it at a presidency and you see the clean break, like a law is passed or a treaty is signed and the economic graph goes up or down. You can just point at the bone and say, there it is, cause and effect.
It's a comforting thought, certainly. We desperately want historical events to be binary, just clean.
Clean, exactly. But then you step into the political and social landscape of the United States from, say, 2015 to 2029, and suddenly that historical X-ray machine just starts smoking and spitting out
It
sparks.
really does. It's a mess.
We're looking at a diagnostic landscape that is incredibly complex. And that is exactly the muddy water we are wading into today. So, welcome to the deep dive. We are taking you on a journey through this massive, meticulously detailed source document called Appendix D, the Trump Scorecard.
Yeah, and it's a heavy read.
Oh, totally. But it evaluates the promises versus the actual measurable results of the Trump era over that whole 14-year stretch.
And you know what makes this specific document so compelling for us to look at isn't just the subject matter, but actually the methodology it uses.
Wait.
It doesn't just give you a basic timeline of what happened. It evaluates the era using a very rigid, four-part framework. So for every major initiative, it asks four things.
Okay, wait.
Eleven, first, what was actually promised? Second, what was practically executed? Third, what were the measurable results? And fourth, and this is where the entire narrative of this era really lives, what were the unintended consequences?
Okay, I love that structure. But I actually need to pause here and state something absolutely critical for you listening. Because our source material deals with inherently heavily politically charged content, this deep dive is completely neutral.
Entirely neutral.
Right. We are not taking any political sides today, not left, not right. We are not endorsing any viewpoints. We are not praising policies, and we are not condemning outcomes. Our only mission here is to act as impartial guides for you, just conveying the ideas, the data, and the historical analysis exactly as they are presented in this original source document. We're really just here to read the historical X-ray.
Exactly. And the very first thing that X-ray reveals is a core premise, which is that history is rarely as simple as just checking boxes on a to-do list.
Yeah, unfortunately.
The source opens by arguing that a policy can be widely successful in one specific, isolated area while, simultaneously triggering a cascade of incredibly chaotic effects in another. You can't just look at the actions taken, you really have to look at the ripple effects.
So let's look at the biggest ripple of them all then. We have to start with the overarching philosophy that drove everything else in this document, the concept of America First. That's theme one.
Right, the big umbrella.
The source makes it explicitly clear that you cannot understand any of the specific laws or tariffs without first understanding this umbrella concept. The promise here was pretty straightforward on paper, right?
Yeah.
Put U.S. interests above all else, reduce foreign obligations, and focus entirely on the national economy and domestic security.
And it wasn't just campaign rhetoric either. According to the scorecard, the execution of this philosophy was incredibly sweeping. It basically became the operating system for almost all policy domains.
Which is wild to think about.
Yeah, I mean, you saw trade agreements entirely renegotiated. You saw immense, relentless pressure applied to military partners. Domestic industry was heavily favored. And the measurable result was that America First wasn't just an American slogan anymore. It actually became a globally recognized geopolitical posture.
So it's spread.
Yeah, the document notes it prompted a wave of other nations to start placing a much heavier emphasis on their own self-interests.
Okay, let's unpack this for a second. It's like a homeowner deciding to cancel their monthly check to the neighborhood watch, right? And instead, they just put high-tech cameras and steel doors on their own house.
That's a good way to look at it.
It saves them money. Their own house feels very secure. But the unintended consequence is that all the neighbors immediately panic and start building their own fortresses. Does prioritizing yourself inherently change the fabric of the community?
Well, what's fascinating here is how the source document actually grades that exact dynamic. It gives the unintended consequences of this philosophy a high rating.
High rating, okay.
Because the immediate fallout was that traditional, long-standing allies began to deeply question the reliability of American commitments. And we see this mechanism perfectly illustrated when the document analyzes theme seven, which is NATO and defense.
Oh, right, the NATO pressure.
Exactly. The explicit promise was to make military allies pay more for their own defense. The execution was constant public and private pressure. And the result? European defense spending did indeed rise significantly, particularly, you know, accelerating after 2022.
Wait, if the European allies actually started paying more, that sounds like a total policy victory. I mean, the neighbors are finally paying for their own security. Why is that flagged as a problem?
Because of the psychological shift it caused. The document gives the execution a high score, yes, but it highlights the unintended consequence, which is that those same allies accelerated their discussions around European strategic autonomy.
Let's translate that jargon for a second. What does European strategic autonomy actually look like in practice?
It basically means Europe realized they couldn't just rely on the United States military umbrella forever.
Oops.
Yeah. If the U.S. was openly questioning the value of the alliance, Europe had to start figuring out how to build their own defense industries, you know, secure their own supply chains, and operate independently. So a domestic political slogan in the U.S. essentially became the catalyst for a massive geopolitical shift, ironically pushing Europe to become more strategically independent from the United States.
So it achieved the direct goal, but fundamentally altered the trust in the larger ecosystem.
Exactly.
So if pulling back from the global community caused that much friction, how did this administration actually secure its own house? Let's move from the philosophical idea of borders to the physical and economic reality. The document spends a lot of time on theme 2, the physical border wall, and theme 3, the trade war with China.
Yeah, they really represent the physical manifestation of prioritizing domestic boundaries.
Right.
Starting with the physical border and immigration, the promise was highly visible, right? Build a wall, and severely restrict illegal immigration. The execution involved pouring billions into border infrastructure and applying incredibly strict enforcement policies.
But looking at the results here, it's not a straight line at all. The scorecard says the actual numbers of crossings fluctuated wildly over the years. Like, sometimes they dropped, but other times the pressure just skyrocketed again.
Because, frankly, physical infrastructure can't stop broader geopolitical or economic crises from driving human migration.
That makes sense.
And the unintended consequences here scored high. The document cites seemingly endless legal battles, massive international criticism regarding human rights, and a deeply reinforced political polarization within the U.S. electorate. Building the wall created this intense ideological divide.
And then they tried to build an economic wall.
Right.
The trade war with China. The promise there was to tackle unfair trade practices and forcefully bring manufacturing back to American soil.
Right.
The execution was massive import tariffs on hundreds of billions of dollars worth of Chinese products. But here's where it gets really interesting. Based on these sources, the trade war was essentially like squeezing a balloon.
Squeezing a balloon? How do you mean?
Well, you squeeze China with tariffs, mm-hmm. hoping to pop their economic dominance and force the air, which is the manufacturing jobs, back into the U.S.
Okay, I follow.
But the document notes that China largely remained economically strong. The manufacturing just popped out into other countries. Like, businesses just rush to diversify their supply chains to avoid the tariffs. It didn't pop the balloon, it just changed its shape, and it left American businesses paying higher costs to navigate that new shape.
That is a vital point in the source material, and it ties into theme 9, which covers industry.
Yay.
The document makes a very sharp distinction between execution and sustainability. Executing a tariff is remarkably easy for an executive branch. A president signs an order, and the tariff is legally in place.
You're done.
Exactly. So execution gets a high score, but sustaining that suddenly reorganized global supply chain without causing severe inflation or product shortages or retaliatory tariffs from other countries, that is incredibly difficult.
So the gap between how easy it is to sign the paper and how hard it is for the global market to adapt, that's where the chaos lives.
Precisely. That gap is where these high unintended consequence scores come from. The document points out that the attempts at industrial redevelopment using subsidies and those same tariffs to force production back to the U.S. did actually result in a partial return of strategic manufacturing.
Okay, so some success.
Yes, but the cost was immense. It created massive supply chain disruptions and entirely new geopolitical tensions.
It seems like every time you build a wall, whether it's made of concrete or economics, someone has to pay a premium for the bricks. Which brings us to the internal engine of the country. If economic walls caused that much friction abroad, what happened when they turned the dials on domestic engineering?
Well, the document evaluates major domestic shifts, specifically focusing on theme 4, the tax reforms of 2017.
Ah, yes.
The promise was classic supply-side economics: stimulate economic growth, attract corporate investment, and boost employment. And the execution was the passage of massive tax cuts.
And according to the measurable results, the short-term execution actually worked. Like, the source notes that economic growth temporarily accelerated and unemployment dropped to historically low levels right before the pandemic hit. So on paper, goal achieved.
On paper, yes.
But I'm looking at the unintended consequences score, and it's flagged as medium. I guess you can't just slash revenue without a catch.
The catch was the national ledger. The document points to significantly higher budget deficits and a massive increase in the national debt.
So, a trade-off.
Yeah, it was a short-term economic sugar rush that handed a long-term bill to future generations. But if you want to see the most complex domestic policy analyzed in the scorecard, we have to look at themes 6 and 8, the energy and climate sector.
Yeah, this part of the source material is truly wild. It's a total paradox. The promise was to prioritize maximal domestic economic growth and energy production explicitly over international climate agreements.
The execution was swift. I mean, the administration withdrew the United States from the Paris Climate Agreement, drastically expanded oil and gas extraction, and heavily deregulated the energy sector.
And the result was exactly what they said it would be: high domestic energy production, greater energy security for the U.S., and massive short-term benefits for the fossil fuel sector. They basically won that round on the domestic board.
Yes, but the unintended consequences for this specific policy scored high. Obviously, it clashed heavily with global climate goals and drew intense international criticism.
Right.
But the most striking unintended consequence listed in the scorecard is this: American deregulation actually accelerated European climate action.
So wait, what does this all mean for you as a listener? We see this recurring pattern. The U.S. pulls back on its international climate commitments, creating a massive leadership vacuum. It deregulates its own domestic energy sector to pump more oil. And Europe, rather than following suit, actually speeds up their own green initiatives in a sort of panic to fill the void.
Exactly.
Can local deregulation actually trigger global hyperregulation?
It absolutely can. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, this source argues it did. The document strongly implies that policies rated highly for short-term domestic success, like boosting fossil fuels, simultaneously triggered high unintended international consequences.
Wow.
It proves that opening thesis of the scorecard: you can succeed perfectly at your specific goal while accidentally knocking over all the pieces on the rest of the board.
It's the ripple effect in action again. The boulder drops in Washington and the wave crashes in Brussels.
Exactly.
But hold on. So far, we've been talking about policies that, frankly, can be undone by the next person to sit in the Oval Office. Like, a new administration can reverse a tariff. They can rejoin a climate pact. They can tweak the tax code. I want to shift to the long game. The legacy changes that outlast presidencies by decades.
We are moving into the structural foundations of the state now. The document evaluates this primarily through theme 5, the Supreme Court departments, and theme 10, the broader fight against the Washington elite.
So let's start with the court. The promise was to appoint conservative judges. The execution was highly successful. Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, and Barrett were appointed.
Right.
The result is a conservative judicial majority secured for a generation. That is a permanent shift in the X-ray.
The execution and goal achievement here score 5 out of 5 stars in the document's framework. It is unequivocally listed as one of the most successful goals of the entire era. Mm-hmm. However, the unintended consequences also score high.
Because it wasn't just about getting the judges on the bench. It was about what happened to the country afterward. This feels like the difference between an earthquake and the aftershocks: the appointments themselves were the earthquake.
Yeah.
But the aftershocks were the intense, deeply emotional societal debates regarding abortion, the limits of federal power, and the extent of presidential immunity. It didn't just change the laws, it polarized the entire legal landscape.
It rewired the baseline of American civil life entirely. And speaking of rewiring baselines, we have to look at the evaluation of the fight against established institutions.
Right, theme 10.
The promise was to challenge the political establishment, to drain the swamp, so to speak.
The execution here was fascinating because it wasn't a specific bill. The source describes it as a virtually permanent campaign against established institutions. It was an atmospheric shift.
And it yielded a very tangible result. A large, historically alienated portion of voters felt far more strongly represented than they had in the past.
Okay, that's significant.
Yeah, they felt their voices were finally being amplified in opposition to a system they viewed as fundamentally corrupt or, at best, utterly stagnant.
I mean, I completely see why that resonates. But the unintended consequence for this specific theme is the only one in the entire 100-page document to receive a very high score. Let me repeat that for the listener.
Yeah,
very high.
It's the only one.
The source lists an alarming, widespread, and catastrophic decline in trust regarding the media, government agencies, elections, and the democratic institutions themselves.
This raises an important question, and it's one the document forces the reader to confront in its final scorecard section. It places the Supreme Court right at the top under most successful goals.
Right.
But literally right next to it, under most controversial consequences, it lists polarization and the loss of trust in institutions. The true legacy of this era is the tension between those two lists.
Exactly. I keep thinking about, you know, finding termites in the foundation of a house. You might have painted the walls beautifully with tax cuts and fixed the roof with energy independence, but if no one trusts that the floorboards will actually hold their weight, the house becomes unlivable.
That's a very vivid way to put it.
That very high decline in institutional trust is an aftershock that permanently alters the landscape for future generations. You can't just pass a bill to make people trust the referee again.
You really can't. And the document's historical conclusion emphasizes this exact point. It argues that most presidents are remembered for the specific laws they sign or the wars they fight, but this era will likely be remembered primarily for the sheer scale of the societal and psychological changes it set into motion.
The structural stuff.
Yes. The greatest impact wasn't necessarily in the individual policies, but in how it completely redefined the conversations around what American national identity even is, the value of globalization, the fragility of democracy, and the U.S.'s role in the world.
So the document asks three final verdict questions. One, did the Trump era fundamentally change the United States? The source says emphatically yes.
Yeah.
Two, did it fundamentally change the rest of the world? Again, the source says yes. And three, are the ultimate consequences fully visible yet?
And the answer to that is a resounding no.
No.
The ripples are still moving outward. The document states that this is exactly why historians will likely debate the true meaning of this era for decades to come. We are still living inside the consequences of these policy scores.
Which brings us to a little exclusive peek at the roadmap ahead for you, because this deep dive doesn't end here. The sources we have explicitly mention that history doesn't just stop at a neat boundary line in 2029.
Right.
The true impact of these political decisions, these broken supply chains, these changes to the courts, they often don't truly materialize until years later.
That's right. The second source document we have access to makes it clear that the scorecard we just reviewed isn't a conclusion at all. It's actually just the prologue to a brand new dossier.
Next time, we are going to dive into that newly opened file, Appendix E, the Living Trump Dossier, detailing the years 2030 to 2035. We're going to track exactly where these ripples finally landed.
It will be crucial to see how those high and very high unintended consequences evolved over the subsequent 5 years. Did that catastrophic loss of trust deepen to a breaking point, or did the institutions find a way to adapt and rebuild credibility?
We will definitely find out. But for now, I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over. We started today by talking about history like an X-ray, trying to see the clean breaks and the clear lines of cause and effect. But when you look at that very high score for the permanent loss of trust in institutions, it changes the whole game. Think about it.
Yeah.
If an era's most potent legacy is a profound, lingering disbelief in the system itself, how does a democracy actually function moving forward when the referee on the field is no longer believed by the players?
It's the ultimate structural challenge. When the mechanisms we use to agree on basic facts are broken, how do you even begin to agree on what's real?
Exactly. Something to think about as you watch the news this week. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the framework, keep looking for the ripples, and keep exploring. We'll see you next time for Appendix E.